When you think big-time movie making, you think Hollywood, not Ashland or Cape Junction. But these are great places to live and work, so why not make movies there? That may be where today's guest comes from. Gary Lundgren is a movie director and screenwriter. His wife, Ann Lundgren, is a movie producer. They live in the Rogue Valley and choose to make movies in the neighborhood. Gary Lundgren taught filmmaking and cinematography at Santa Barbara City College, worked as a filmmaker and screenwriter, directed the feature film Calvin Marshall, a baseball movie, back in 2005 with Steve Zahn as one of the stars. Redwood Highway, shot along its namesake, is still playing in theaters here and there across the country. Gary Lundgren, good to have you back on The Exchange.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey. Great to be back.
Let's talk about how it all started. Wow and Flutter was your first short feature?
Yeah, that was actually a short film. We filmmaking's a strange thing. As a young filmmaker, you have to have work that stands up and stands out. And so we sort of put everything we had into that short back in 2004, Annie and I. And we shot it in Southern Oregon while we were living here for a year temporarily. We came from LA and then went back to LA with the short film to try to open doors.
I'm curious to know why you came here temporarily, or thought it was temporarily anyway.
I think the beautiful location's number one. We wanted that short to have sort of a small town America feel. We wanted it to feel timeless, and I think, you know, LA is a tougher place to get off a small production. I think we had family in the area, and it just made sense to sort of take a year and make that short and go back.
In LA, you have a lot of union rules and stuff. In fact, I was reading within the last year about what TMZ actually stands for, 30-mile zone.
Yes. Well, it's funny. You know, the unions are there to protect us and protect the crew. They're great. I think with shooting in areas like Southern Oregon, you don't need to shoot with the union. Certainly SAG is a union you have to abide by.
Screen Actors Guild. Sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's one of those things where choosing a location has to do with what works for the story, what works for your crew size, your budget size. Filmmaking's a house of cards, so you have to have the right recipe to make it work. And sometimes being in a big city, you know, you would tell certain kinds of stories there that you couldn't tell in a small region like Southern Oregon.
Does working from a smaller place change your approach right from the get-go? I mean, do you just think in terms of different kinds of stories based on where you plan to do the work?
For sure. Definitely. I think, you know, the new movie Black Road, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit today, that was sort of inspired by the state of Jefferson, that whole movement, and it's set 30 years from now, so it's actually set in the state of Jefferson.
The real state of Jefferson 30 years in the future.
Exactly. So, it was nice to set it here because we were imagining sort of a lawless state with new borders and new rules, and so what a better place to shoot that movie than here, where it would be.
Did you meet Ann Lundgren through the business?
I met Ann in college, and we immediately began making projects together. She worked in the software industry as a project manager, which is essentially producing one-on-one. You know, I think it was one of those things where her skill set of organizing and keeping everyone on the same page and executing became a really real asset to our team. Yeah.
And how hard do you have to work, if at all, to keep cinema and home life apart?
Well, that's one of the reasons we have a small place that we live in and we have an office. I think we kind of tried our best to separate it. Our daughter is now 8, and so we're really focused on being parents here and raising our family and then doing our best to separate it. But as a movie approaches, it all kind of comes together where we're working pretty much 24/7 now leading up to shooting.
I was going to ask you if it was 18-hour days and then more than that.
There's just so much to do. You know, you're wearing, especially with a small budget, you know, we're all wearing many hats, even our crew, which we love our crew. They're all wearing multiple hats at this stage. So getting ready to prep and shoot.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about the coming shooting of Black Road, the new feature from Gary and Ann Lundgren. and some of his previous work, Calvin Marshall and Redwood Highway among them. Welcome back on the Jefferson Exchange, and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Gary Lundgren and you on the Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about making movies on a somewhat smaller scale, making them Southern Oregon style, not Southern California style. Gary Lundgren knows just a little bit about that. Gary and wife Ann, Gary's the director, Ann's the producer, have made a couple of movies in the region already and are working on another called Black Road, a futuristic thriller set 30 years in the future in the lawless state of Jefferson. Quote fingers around lawless state of Jefferson. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange if you have questions or comments about movie making in the region or stuff in specific about Gary and Ann's movies. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned going basically 24/7, getting ready for Black Road. This is the story itself is interesting, but the process is very interesting as well. Just trying to get here, and you've been doing the whole Kickstarter thing, I notice.
Yeah, you know, the business model of independent film is broken right now, and I think there's, at the same time, there's opportunities to build an audience ahead of a shoot. So that's what we're doing. We're engaging with the audience. We're pre-selling the movie, pre-selling the DVD to our fans and our friends. And it helps, you know, mitigate the risk of a creative project like this a little bit, you know. There's a lot of movies being made. It's cheaper to make movies nowadays. The middle class of filmmaking has sort of gone away. So it's either big or small. And like many things in our country,
more separation. Right now. Yeah, there's a really big time and there's a really small time, and not a lot of middle ground. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So how different would this have been, say, 10 years ago? How would the whole process have been for Black Road back then?
I think, you know, indies then were being made for $3, $4, or $5 million. Even $1 million was considered risky and not enough money. Because people were shooting on celluloid then, film, and they were, you needed more crew people to shoot. Nowadays, with digital cameras and digital cinema, you can have a small crew. You can have a really small crew. The operation is just smaller at every level. You know, I think the film industry has followed the music industry, really, where there's just, you're making less money and you're spending less money.
Interesting, yeah, and you have to find your people more directly. It's not like you can just, in the case of the music industry, go sell CDs in a store and think people will show up there. You got to offer your stuff online. And so the Kickstarter thing, I noticed that particularly you're doing a good job thanking people on your Twitter feed as well. Seems like every time there's a new person who comes in through Kickstarter, Ann goes out and sends out a thank you note through Twitter.
Yes. Well, you know, we can't do this without partnering with an audience. You know, if the audience didn't want to see the movie or didn't want to see us make another movie, then I think it'd be harder to reach our Kickstarter goal. So I think showing appreciation and really connecting with those people who want to see films made in Southern Oregon and want to see us succeed in making a third feature here are stepping up to the plate and helping out. So we're really grateful for that.
What is it your script then for Black Road?
My script, yeah. Wrote it 3 years ago, and we've been trying to get it made since then in various capacities. You know, at first, we were thinking maybe a larger budget, and Redwood Highway came along, and so which is a great opportunity, a fun film to make, and so we sort of put our pet project on hold while we made that film here, and so now we're kind of coming back to it this year.
So what is the basic premise of Black Road?
Well, you know, it's a film noir. A lot of people say, is it science fiction? Is it, you know, how are you going to do that on a budget? But I keep emphasizing it's a little bit more of a noir film. Noir was a reaction after World War II, and it was more of a, in retrospect, the genre defined itself, where our sort of disillusioned protagonists were get caught up in a bad situation.
Anti-hero types, you know.
Exactly.
Broken down, drunken detectives, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, we have a little of that in this film for sure. And nowadays, you know, there's wealth inequality. We all know those stories. And there is, you know, the job market is tough for college students, you know, entering the job market. And so the story is a little reflective of those things. And then also private government, you know, the government privacy issues, like if states do secede, they would be, embracing freedom as opposed to feeling like the government was watching them every step of the way. So we thought that there's an element of that in the theme as well.
All right, hence the lawless state of Jefferson part of the description here. So is there no controlling legal authority in the state of Jefferson? Or?
There is. It's forming. It's evolving. It's kind of idealistic and puts a lot of emphasis on the citizens to make the government they want. And so it's in this sort of state of flux where they're still trying to make it work.
Obviously, working with a budget like yours, you can't show a lot of things. But, I mean, how much do you reveal about the state of the world outside the state of Jefferson? I mean, has Grants Pass become a coastal city because of global warming? I mean, right. Has there been nuclear war? Is there still a United States? Things like that.
You know, we really are trying to stick to the story. As I said, it's a noir story, so it's about these relationships. I think little bits of exposition pops up throughout the story. So I think you'll find out when you see the movie. I think there is some things that have happened and we're feeling the effect of those things, but we're not necessarily filming those things.
And Sam Daly, I understand, will play the major role.
Yeah, Sam is has been a big part of this from the beginning. I don't know if you know his dad is Tim Daly. He comes from a long line of actors.
Yeah, what a pedigree, huh?
Yeah. And he's terrific. He's got a great personality. He's very talented. He's very motivated. And he's in every scene in the movie, too, which is exciting.
Busy guy. I'm just struck. First of all, Tyne Daly's his aunt. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So the Daly family is certainly a lot of good actors there. And I just was struck. I've seen a lot of work by Tim Daly over the years. Sam Daly just looks and sounds so much like him.
I know. Yeah, there's a web show called The Daly Show that a good friend of mine directs. And it's they're terrific little web show that they do. And
Daly without the I, we should point out, not the Daly Show with the I, which is Jon Stewart. Yes,
correct. Tim and Sam sort of do an exaggerated version of their father son relationship, which they have in real life, and it's ridiculous. And a lot of people wonder if they're brothers when they watch it, because Tim just he seems almost ageless these days. So it's a great show to watch.
All right, I'll have to check that out. I noticed that yesterday, The Daly Show, D-A-L-Y. I have to wonder about special effects. You got, because Sam Daly's character is actually a cyborg, is that right?
Correct. He's ex-military, so he has an artificial intelligence embedded into his head, and it's got a personality. It's got, he has a relationship with this being, and it becomes a device, you know, not so much a conscience, but almost as his life kind of spirals out of control, the computer is part of it.
Interesting. More like Jiminy Cricket or more like the devil on the shoulder?
Well, I think you'll have to see the film. I think there's certainly a will that Sam's character has to impose on the story. And sometimes he's at odds with what Clyde, which is the voice, is suggesting. So
we're talking to Gary Lundgren about making movies in Southern Oregon on a somewhat smaller scale. He's made a couple of movies here already, Calvin Marshall and Redwood Highway, his features. He's also made some shorter works here as well, and is in the process of putting together the funding for Black Road, the next one, the futuristic noir film in the lawless state of Jefferson set 30 years in the future. Join us on The Exchange if you have questions about Gary's specific projects or more general questions about movie making in the region or movie making generally. Gary's been there at a lot of levels. Join us at 800 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So is a lot of the cyborg stuff just sort of by suggestion? I mean, you're not going to have a heavy makeup and prosthetics? Or
There is going to be some – it's going to be simple, I'll put it that way. But there's definitely some things we're casting, some prosthetics, and some things that Sam will have on his head to represent it in his face. But it's going to be pretty simple. It's not like he has a computer head or a robot head or anything.
Not like the lighting up circuit lines in that that TV show that was out this spring.
Right.
Which I forget the name of what right. said. We talked about the funding process, about going through this through Kickstarter. And did we talk about how far you've gotten, how close you are to your goal?
Yeah, we're getting there. We've had a lot of support. We came out of the gate really strong, and now we need a strong finish. I think we are 78% funded, and we've got 5 days. So we'll need to rally the you know, all hands on deck for the next 4 days and make sure we meet that goal.
We can relate. This is like a pledge drive for public radio.
That's what it feels like. You have to sort of be that constant voice in the social networking, and it's fun, but it's definitely a full-time job to try to get people to pitch in. And we're emphasizing it's pre-ordering the movie. You know, it's not it is a donation, but at the same time, they're getting good value with what we're giving back.
You will get the DVD, the finished DVD of Black Road.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so you've had some interesting friends, I noticed, come into the process. Have you gotten some of your pledges in kind and some matches and things like that as well?
Yeah, you know, we have a lot of great support. There's some – the co-op matched a pledge yesterday. Brammo has been really great. They're going to loan us a motorcycle for Sam to ride. And they've contributed financially. It takes the whole community, I think, to make something like this work at a high level. You can't really make a film in a vacuum. And so we've been lucky with our track record so far that people really want to support us. So
I wondered if it was going to be in kind stuff, like particularly when I saw that Brammo was involved. But, you know, that also presents some interesting questions. You're dealing with a movie 30 years in the future. So do you kind of make the Brammo dinged up and dirty to look like a 30-year-old cycle?
Well, we're kind of talking about that. I think there's some things we'll do. We definitely want to show off the bike and make it cool. But I think it shouldn't look like he just drove it off the lot, you know.
Right.
So we'll be dealing with that. Might just be a little dirt, you know. But and it's not like we're going to feature it in a like it's not Knight Rider, you know.
Right.
It's just a bike.
It's not the talking motorcycle,
right? Exactly.
That's an interesting concept, though. Hey, I think we're onto something here, Lundgren. let's talk about the first full blown feature you made, which was Calvin Marshall, right?
Yes.
And when was that shot and then released later? Right.
We shot it in 2007, late 2007, and it was released in 2009, 2010. So there's about a 2-year period of post-production there.
And given the scale of it, I mean, this is a pretty – I mean, just in physical space. I mean, you had to rent the baseball park and stuff. I mean, so what was it like to get the ducks lined up for doing that scale of a film and then get a crew, a quality crew in Southern Oregon?
It was surprisingly – you know, of course it was difficult. But at the same time, if you know what you're doing and you partner with the right people, it's very doable. I think it happened at a time when movies were being made for multi-millions of dollars. You know, the small indies, there was very few movies being made for $500,000. When you're talking about a baseball comedy with famous actors, the budget just kind of sits at a place like where this is what it costs to do. That's the way it was in 2006, 2007, when we were putting the movie together. And getting crew... lots of amazing crew in Southern Oregon. Southern Oregon Film and Television, which one of our producers, Gary Kaut, runs, really does a great job at mobilizing talent that's here for out-of-state productions, for in-state productions. The governor's office in Portland does a great job. I mean, Portland's really a hotbed for television and film right now, so... even back in 2007 for Calvin, it was easy to put a great crew together.
But some of them did have to travel down. From
yeah, we did have to bring some people from Portland and a few people from L.A. for sure. And in this case, for Black Road, it is almost all Southern Oregon. There are a few people coming from Portland still, though.
Is it kind of like making a great team in a sport, like, you know, getting the big three for the Miami Heat or something? If you get a few key people into the region, eventually it'll attract more people to come in and be part of that?
For sure. And I would say that's a great analogy. A lot of people say, well, how can you make a movie like this for this price? And it's because we've been working for 10 years together making movies and writing movies and you know, editing movies together and releasing them and screening them. And I think we've got a really great chemistry with Patrick Neary, our director of photography, our camera crew, our grip and electric guys. You know, it really is like a fun place to be, our sets. We have a great time. So, and part of that is because we work well together and can trust each other.
We're talking to Gary Lundgren on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the director. His wife, Ann, is the producer of a couple of feature films, Made in Southern Oregon, Redwood Highway, and Calvin Marshall, working on the forthcoming Black Road. You sort of answered this already, but and I want to just go a little further with the whole Portland connection here, because Portland is a hotbed. I mean, we got Portlandia, we got Grimm, we had Leverage up there. So there clearly is then some kind of a ripple effect for places outside the metro area? Just in the sense of at least having people handy.
For sure, yeah. Annie recently produced a music video for the band Perry in Salem. And so she traveled north and put a crew together that was made up of some mostly Portland folks that came out to Salem. I think it's one of those things where if there is work here, then people often move to the area to, you know, once they work on a show, they decide to relocate. And it's growing. Southern Oregon's a little bit tougher because it's smaller and there's less going on. But, you know, last year we had Redwood Highway. We had Night Moves, the new Kelly Reichert film, which is out now. It's a great film. And that was shot all here in Southern Oregon. So,
and bits of Strayed. Cheryl Strayed's
Wild.
Wild,
yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And Annie was the sort of liaison for that show. So she helped put the whole shoot together, which was big. I mean, tons of businesses had to cooperate, and she had to interface with the city and make sure everyone was happy and that the filmmakers were happy. And apparently it went great.
Yeah, I heard about the sticking of green leaves back onto the trees of
right.
The plaza because it was already into fall colors. You mentioned Annie making a music video recently. You've actually directed some of those yourself too, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, we do a lot of commercial work, a lot of corporate work, a lot of we've done music videos. Music videos are tricky because only the bigger bands can afford a real budget. So often you're shooting those on shoestrings too nowadays. So the corporate work is what really pays the bills, to be honest. That's how we make a living. And then often the real creative work is we fit those in between the stuff that pays the bills. So
I have to believe that the music videos have some particular tricks to them, though, because you're trying to get, what looks like performance shots and lip syncing and all that stuff going on. So it requires a little more of crew and actors, doesn't it?
For sure. Yeah. And we recently did, actually, it's been a couple of years now, but there was some videos we did for a great band called The Janks. And we had to lip sync with them in fast motion and then play it back in slow motion. So.
That are fine. So you can do the whole slow motion playback and they're singing in real time.
Right.
Yeah, it's like in Wrapped Around Your Finger by the Police. Okay, I'm showing my age, aren't I? Welcome back and talk more with Gary Lundgren about making movies in Southern Oregon, making his movies more specifically, when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well if you'd like to join us back here with Gary Lundgren and you in a minute 25. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Gary Lundgren. He lives in Southern Oregon and is a movie maker. He directs movies. His wife, Ann Lundgren, produces those movies. They work as a team very well, and they have found some great economies of scale and some great places to tell stories in Southern Oregon filmmaking, have made Calvin Marshall and Redwood Highway among their feature films, are now in the process of securing the funding via Kickstarter for making another film called Black Road, set 30 years in the future in the lawless state of Jefferson. We can talk about the projects that they have worked on and are working on, or the process of making movies in the region more generally. Phone numbers here if you'd like to join us, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Let's talk a bit about Redwood Highway. And we talked already about shooting things with Calvin Marshall. Like, you had to shoot baseball scenes in the winter, right?
We did. Yeah. Yeah, well, baseball, you try out for baseball in the fall. So that was always hard for the general population to understand, that that's really when you try out for college teams. So we made it work. But, yeah, we didn't get the spring feeling.
And this is what you have to work with. I mean, shooting with Redwood Highway was a lot of outdoor stuff on Redwood Highway itself, right? That must have presented some challenges.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, we shot that movie in 19 days. We were in over 40 locations. It took a really great team to execute that, from our producing team to our AD staff to moving equipment around. All the locations we partnered with, it was a big, big operation, even though it was a small movie.
A big operation, but a small movie.
Yeah.
19 days, that is a breakneck pace, isn't it?
It is. You know, you come to a location and you have 2 or 3 hours to shoot a scene that you really would like 10 hours to shoot. So you just have to execute. You know, it's like another sports analogy. It's like executing an offense and pre-planning and having a plan going in and making it as great as you can, and then moving to the next location, and don't try not to look back and regret.
I'm always curious about the roles of director and producer, because you mentioned that Annie's really good at project management. That's how she got to be a producer with you. So is she actually out there on the scene, cracking the whip, making sure that things are falling into place as you're trying to work on the actual shooting scene itself?
Oh, for sure. I think often they have a foot on set, the producing team, and a foot in the office as they're looking ahead, always on the phone about
setting
what
up the next place. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a juggling act. It's you know, keeping 12 balls in the air and hopefully not dropping any. You know, from a directing standpoint, all I can think about is, how is this scene going to work dramatically? Is it good? Are the performances good? Is it going to edit together? Is it going to work in the big picture of the movie? Am I giving myself enough options as we're shooting to protect ourselves in the edit, different tones ways we might go? So that's really what I'm obsessed with. I try not to worry too much about all the details.
Given that you're working on a small budget, though, I mean, do you have to dispense with people who might be part of the crew generally, like continuity people who can help with stuff like that, and go, wait, the toothbrush was in the left hand last time?
Yeah, you know, Back when we had bigger crews, we had, you know, like, we had an amazing continuity person, a script supervisor on Calvin Marshall, and she was a lifesaver. We haven't had that luxury on these smaller movies, so we have to kind of all wear that hat, whether it's the DP or often the AD who's watching your back. And then with digital cinema, you can always pull up scenes really quick.
You can look at it right then and there. Yeah,
it's
there's
not
no,
like
no souping the film. Yeah.
Right.
Which raises the question then about equipment then, because there was some reference, I think, in one of the music videos about using a hand cranked 35mm camera.
Yeah, you know, we were shooting a 20s music video, and you can see that online. It's a music video called Hands of Time by the Janks, and Janks, and they're a Los Angeles band. They're terrific. And the producers of that video and I had this idea to set it in sort of a 20s speakeasy and make it fun and cool. And so Patrick, our DP, has an old...
Director of photography.
He has an old Mitchell camera that collects cameras. And so we ran some Kodak stock through it and hand-cranked that video. So it's all hand-cranked. And, of course, transferred at a modern facility and color corrected at a modern facility. But you can see it, and it has a real nice look to it.
Is the modern facility in Portland? Do you have one with that close, or does it all have to go to LA?
Yeah, you know, there was a great lab in Seattle that recently closed called Alpha Cine that we always used, and so now that was in Los Angeles.
Sometimes it must be like trying to run off a bridge that's just collapsing behind you when you're working in this business, because so much is changing as you go on. The basic infrastructure, things like labs that would soup your film for you, and the funding and the crew and all that stuff.
For sure. I think you have to look ahead. You know, Scorsese recently said that he looks forward to making a film with holograms. You know, he's that kind of director. He wants to look ahead about what's next, even though he embraces the history of cinema and still shoots. Well, actually, Wolf of Wall Street was digital, but still shoots on film a lot. But you have to look ahead. Things are changing, and it can be big advantages if you embrace some of the new technologies and ways to improve the process of telling a story.
So when you're not using a 35 millimeter hand crank, what do you generally shoot on though? And I mean, because I know there's high def 1080, but we've moved up to there's also a 2K and a 4K format, which is twice and four times as dense a picture.
Yeah, 4K has been the new buzzword, but everyone still watches movies in 2K. So it's not totally necessary yet, but what that latitude gives you, you just have a huge image to work with. You can reframe shots if necessary in post. There's a lot more information in the image, so you can manipulate it and change maybe obviously the color, but even just the look of it. So it gives you.
I hadn't even thought about that aspect of it though. When you got a picture that's got that much information, you can actually do a zoom in digitally in post that you didn't do when you had the camera.
Exactly, and sometimes you have to do that. Like even on Redwood Highway, if like a C stand is in the frame, or perhaps you're trying to make an edit work, you can move in. You can crop the image a little bit and sort of erase some of your mistakes.
We had a call a while ago from Jeannie in Medford who wanted to know, in the process of making Redwood Highway, if you visited Tequilma. She was curious about the tree houses in particular and whether you got any inspiration from the Tequilma area, that kind of little zone of counterculture folks living south of Cave Junction.
For sure. James Twyman, the main producer and the co-writer of Redwood Highway, he and I spent a lot of time on the highway thinking, well, if Marie was walking this highway, where would she go? What kind of trouble would she get into? Where would she sleep? How far would she venture off the road? Those sorts of things if someone was going to walk to Brookings. So we did our best to make it as authentic as possible. And that area with the treehouses was definitely beautiful, and the people there have been wonderful. We partnered with a lot of neat folks. We were in Kirby at the Burl shop there, which is an amazing place to stop. We shot there with Tom Skerritt. But we ended up using the treehouse at the Burl. So it just worked better because it's right on the highway there. You know.
What was it like to work with Tom Skerritt, Shirley Knight, Steve Zahn, and Calvin Marshall? I mean, people who've made enough films to be able to – they could have said, hey, no, forget it, but they came here anyway.
Yeah, you know, there's always that humbling part of it that they've been in a lot more movies than I've directed. And so you just have to have respect. You sort of have to earn their trust. You know, I think you build that relationship where they learn to look to you and trust you. And – you know, with different actors, it's easier. Some actors, it's harder. But I think they're pros. You know, they're pros. They love what they do. They know what they're doing. And so, really, you just cast great actors and try not to get in their way, and hopefully help them enough to where you're elevating their performances. And of course, I'm the editor too, so I'd like to think the editing helps their performances too, where I can shape it as we're shooting and also shape it in the edit.
Do you get a chance to even get to know them very well? And the reason I ask this is when you talk about, you know, trying to get a shot done in a few hours, it's like, bam, bam, boom, let's get this done and move on to the next place. Yeah. I really wonder if you really get a chance to even spend any time with them as,
you know,
people.
You do. It's a bit like summer camp. You're sort of thrown in this really sort of high energy, tiring environment. It's emotional. You're creating art together. There's a lot of downtime And certainly some of the actors I've kept in touch with and I can text and I'm still friends with. And then others, it's more of a professional relationship where you just work together and then hopefully maybe you run into each other down the line somewhere. Shirley Knight has been fantastic. She's a lovely person, and she supported the film and has gone out to so many Q&As. She loves the movie. So that's definitely sort of a feather in our cap that she had such a great experience, not just shooting the movie, but how it turned out. And now it's part of her legacy.
So Gary Lundgren, what has been the general response to Redwood Highway? Have you gotten really favorable responses, tepid ones? I mean, a mix?
Yeah. You know, it's always an interesting thing what audiences think of movies. You know, it's definitely a slower paced film. So if you're looking for, I mean, she's walking down the highway 80 miles. So, I don't know why anyone would expect it. Yeah. I don't know why anyone would expect it to be breakneck speed or anything. But I think it's 89% on Rotten Tomatoes now. So the critics have really embraced her performance in the movie. It's a very, understated kind of film. That's the kind of filmmaking I like. It doesn't hit people over the head with how they should think or feel about the story. It just kind of tells the story in a very efficient way. And hopefully audiences who embrace that sort of fill in the gaps, you know. And so it's gone over great. Festival play has been awesome. There have definitely been people that it's moving and touching. So it's good.
It seems to be a real rolling release, too. I mean, I noticed that it's still playing in parts of New York and Florida, was here until very recently in Ashland, et cetera. I mean, it kind of hops around.
Yeah, it's an indie. You know, Monterey Media, our distributor, has done a great job at just sort of cherry-picking and rolling it out, not spending a ton of money, and it's already made like $100,000 in the box office. So, and it's played in over 50 to 60 markets, and sometimes that's just one night. Sometimes it's over a weekend. Sometimes it's 2 or 3 weeks. It'll just depend on how they think they can mobilize an audience without overspending. You know, it's a tricky balance. They can't just throw $10 million at the movie, which you'd like them to do, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense nowadays.
Given your taste, though, for the kinds of stories you want to tell, and it sounds like you prefer a more thoughtful, intimate kind of pace. I mean, did you ever have big movie dreams? Did you ever want to make, you know, Frankenstein meets the Transformers or something?
No. For better or for worse, I've always been a fan of character-driven cinema. You know, most of my favorite films were made in the 70s. So there's always an anachronistic quality, I think, to the stuff I want to make. Which is, you know, you can't help get away from it. I think even when you say, I'm going to make a genre film and it's going to be, you know, a popcorn movie, it always sort of settles into your sensibilities and you start caring about things that maybe the average Hollywood director would not put in a movie like this. You got to follow your sensibilities. It's got to be authentic or it'll feel false. So I like the idea of doing sort of a thoughtful thriller that's character driven and raises some questions. So at the same time, it's going to be suspenseful and creepy. There's some creepy things that happen in the story. There's some larger than life characters where, you know, I'm a big David Lynch fan. So I think there's a little bit of that influence probably in there somewhere.
Yeah, I almost recorded Mulholland Drive again recently when it came past on one of the cable channels. It's a taste that doesn't go away, does it?
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's just an artist working at such a high level in a genre, and it becomes memorable and not typical. And so I think that's what we're trying to do with this one is do something unique and special and not think too much about who's going to like it and who isn't, you know.
Given that Black Road is set in the lawless state of Jefferson, I love that phrase, 30 years in the future, I mean, are you planning on shooting it in ways that people will recognize places that exist now?
It's going to feel new. I think we're going to composite a lot of stuff into it. Like, we're going to bring the ocean to Ashland a little bit, where you'll see the ocean on the horizon with some of the locations here. It's going to feel like it's on the coast. We're going to deal with some digital billboards and digital gadgetry and sort of mix it with kind of a crumbling society.
It's a little Blade Runner feel.
A little bit. You know, we don't have the budget to kind of go that far, but I think, less is more, I think, with some of these things, that it's just going to have some nice little touches where it'll feel like a new – it's 30 years from now, hopefully. That's the goal without killing our budget.
You know? Okay. So people go to your film company website. Can they find the jump-off place to get your Kickstarter thing access?
Yes, they can.
All right. Joma Films?
Joma Films.
All right. Gary Lundgren, thanks so much for joining us. Always good to talk to you about movie making in Southern Oregon.
Thanks, Jeffrey. My pleasure.
All right. Take care.